Civil rights lawyer Larry Craster will be sworn in as Philadelphia's district attorney in January. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Craster's promising major changes in how the office charges and resolves crimes, with an emphasis on leniency rather than punishment, and giving second chances to first-time offenders. WHYY's Bobby Allen talked to a top prosecutor in the DA's office in New York City about a major overhaul there in 2010.
When Cy Vance took over the DA's office in Manhattan, he wanted police to arrest fewer people. Karen Friedman Agnifilo is the number two prosecutor in the office. She says it's not easy to just come in with a big idea and then implement it by fiat.
You need to take the time to understand what the problems are, what the issues are, talk to people, get buy-in, get the process. And it took us 6 months just to get the data, just to get a handle on the data within our office. We didn't know what we had, and we didn't know what we didn't know.
She says when they did crunch the numbers, this is what they found. 100,000 people were being arrested every year, and 80% of them were for minor crimes, like misdemeanors and violations. Friedman Agnifilo says this is just not a good use of police or prosecutors' time.
We thought, rather than prosecuting them for these crimes, why don't we try to divert them and help them with whatever's going on in their life that caused this arrest to begin with?
And so the office publicly announced that it would stop prosecuting nuisance crimes. Not arresting turnstile jumpers in the subway system alone meant 50,000 fewer cases for the DA's office. After looking at their data, here's another thing Manhattan prosecutors noticed. Many people were getting arrested for failing to pay fines connected to low-level crimes from a long time ago.
They're for things like drinking in public. They're for things like putting 2 feet up on the subway, riding a bike on the sidewalk, urinating in public, things like that. And it's things that it's not going to, no human police officer is going to remember that from 10 or more years ago. Some were 20 years old. So they're unprovable anyway. And if that's what's causing people to go through the system, it makes no sense.
In August, prosecutors in Manhattan were joined by the DA offices in Brooklyn, Queens, and the Bronx in purging thousands of open warrants of people from years and years ago.
And in Manhattan alone, Cy Vance stood up and moved to dismiss 240,000 summons warrants.
Friedman Agnifilo says they wanted to reverse that old DA adage. When the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Instead, she said,
you can reduce your criminal justice footprint and still make crime grow down. And that is something we have learned.
Crime has hit historic lows in New York. For instance, there were 41 murders last year in Manhattan. Compare that to the crime wave of the 1970s, when there were more than 600 murders a year in just that one borough. Crime experts say the ever-growing wealth of Manhattan has made it unaffordable to thousands of residents and pushed crime out elsewhere. But Friedman Agnifilo says her office's targeted prosecution of the really bad guys is also part of the story. It's a reversal of broken windows policing ushered in when Rudy Giuliani was mayor. It focused on cracking down on quality of life crimes like graffiti and panhandling as a way of getting at the more serious offenses. Friedman Agnifilo says that can sow distrust among residents and
it's really important to know who the people in your community are who are responsible for the crime or the violent crime in particular. And if you can know who those people are and you devote your resources to just those, you can easily bring down your crime numbers significantly.
What advice does she have for anti-establishment Larry Krasner, who will be coming into office in Philadelphia looking to really upend the status quo?
Understand what's going on in your office, and you will see lots and lots of opportunities for change and reform.
But getting the 600 lawyers in the Philly DA's office, who are used to a prosecutor running the show, to quickly agree to the agenda of a former civil rights attorney, that will be a big challenge for Krasner. And the rest of his agenda relies on him making it work. Bobby Allen, WHYY News.
While the races for Philadelphia District Attorney and New Jersey Governor garnered the most attention yesterday, some of the most striking election results involved Democratic success in the Philly suburbs. WHYY's Dave Davies reports.
Republicans have dominated Delaware County politics for decades, but that changed yesterday. David Landau is the county Democratic chairman.
We were up against one of the most powerful political machines in the country. We hadn't won any elections in a popular election. They ruled for 140 years. And we had a tidal wave up and down the ticket.
Voters elected the first two Democratic County Council members ever, along with a Democratic sheriff, county controller, and register of wills. It wasn't just Delaware County, though. Democrats also won countywide row offices in Chester County for the first time since the county was established in the 1790s. And in Bucks County, they won certain offices for the first time in 30 years. Party leaders say they had good candidates and good messages, but Chester County Democratic Chairman Brian McGinnis says this was also about using local votes to send a national message.
People could say what they want, but Trump was on the ballot, and his policies were on the ballot, and we made sure that we wanted to make this a statement election.
Delaware County Republican Chairman Andy Riley says he knew Democrats were making registration gains as the county's demographics changed. And, yeah, there's that Trump thing.
They had an easy motivator in Washington, D.C. Their base was easily motivated, and it didn't cost them much to motivate that base.
What does it mean? Congressional elections are next year, and Democrats think Tuesday's results show they have a shot at rousting Republican Congressman Pat Meehan, Ryan Costello, or Brian Fitzpatrick from their suburban seats. State Republican Chairman Val DiGiorgio says he's expecting a tough battle.
But we're prepared. We're already raising the money we need to raise for our candidates. Our candidates have shown the ability to vote their districts, which will be important next year.
One vote they may have to consider soon will be over President Trump's tax plan. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
Pennsylvania homeowners may or may not enjoy property tax cuts after voters yesterday approved a ballot question. Let's consider the possibilities with Ryan Briggs, reporter for City and State PA. Ryan, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thanks for having me on.
Ryan, the ambiguity comes in part from the wording of the question, but based on voter precedent at the polls, it would have been more surprising had it gone down to defeat.
Yeah, voters in Pennsylvania have a very good track record of approving these kinds of ballot questions. 15 out of the last 15 have passed.
Certainly, the constitutional amendment does not in and of itself reduce taxes. It more or less allows lawmakers to explore that prerogative.
Yeah, what the constitutional amendment is going to do is allow Harrisburg to pass legislation that would then in turn let municipalities exempt up to 100% of the property taxes on an owner-occupied property. It's sort of a virtual form of property tax abolition. So you're not saying outright we're going to get rid of all property taxes, but you're kind of opening up this theoretical channel for municipalities to effectively do away with all of a homeowner's property taxes.
Now, we got halfway to the goal 20 years ago.
Yeah, 20-some years ago, there was a similar amendment that allowed municipalities to do the same thing for up to 50% of the value of an owner-occupied unit, a homestead, I guess people like to say. And since then, I don't believe very many municipalities have actually taken advantage of that option.
Obviously, then, though, how would municipalities alternately raise the revenue for schools, et cetera?
The constitutional amendment is silent on how that would happen. It would most likely come from increases in local tax revenue, income tax being one of the only other options that a lot of municipalities would have to exercise. But there's always going to be the question, what's going to fill the void?
Understandably, seniors, those on fixed income, can appropriately decry rising property tax bills. Though, if you were to advantage property owners, then by definition, wouldn't you be burdening those who don't own a home, specifically the poor?
However, the revenue side of this shakes out, you are invariably going to be shifting taxes away from a homeowner and onto a group of people that do not all own homes. And not to overly generalize, but renters are going to be part of that pool, and they're probably not going to all be as able to pay for some of the increased tax burden. Critics of the bill say that there's a regressive element to it because you're shifting the burden away from people who implicitly have a kind of wealth, their home, to people who maybe don't. But if you're a renter who is barely making, you know, their monthly payment and your income tax goes up 30% so that somebody who owns a home or a mansion gets their entire property tax bill washed away, I think that that would be tough to deal with too. So there's an element of this that's kind of like robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Is there anything in the language of this ballot question that speaks to a potential timetable for implementation?
Unfortunately, no. And talking to some people in Harrisburg, it sounds like it's really up to the General Assembly to actually do anything with this new power that they have been given through the constitutional amendment. And if they don't decide to move on that, then maybe nothing happens.
But even if they do decide to move, then the onus is in turn on municipalities to act.
The municipalities would then have the option to act, right? So it's all optional when you kind of dig down a little bit. Harrisburg has the option to pass legislation that would allow municipalities to then have the option to exempt people from certain, you know, types of property tax, most types of property tax. It's not clear if or when that would ever happen, though.
But we'll see if it ever gets past the experiment stage.
Yeah.
Thanks indeed. So much for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks for having me on.
Ryan Briggs, reporter for City and State PA. It's been 3 years since Philadelphia became the first major city in the country to decriminalize small amounts of marijuana. And these days, if you're caught with pot in your pocket or a lit joint, you're far more likely to be fined than arrested. And as WHYY's Aaron Moselle reports, you might not have to pay up.
The Philadelphia law gives police officers the option of fining people for having about an ounce of weed or smoking in public. It's $25 for possession, $100 for puffing in public. The idea is to keep people out of the criminal justice system for offenses the city sees as smaller than small potatoes. Deputy Mayor Jim Engler helped write the law introduced by then-councilman, now-mayor Jim Kenney.
Not impacting their ability to get a job or to go back to college is really the benefit of the ordinance for this minimal activity.
To date, police have written nearly 7,000 citations for possession and what the data calls public use. That translates to more than $300,000 owed to the city. How much of that has hit city coffers? Only a hair above 20%, begging another question. Is having a small stash of pot effectively legal in Philly? Engler says no.
It's specifically laid out in state law and in the Philadelphia Code as being against the law to have in your possession. We wanted to create a structure that we thought really fit the offense.
The law makes possessing or smoking marijuana similar to a summary offense. That means you can't be penalized for not paying up. The city can't add to what you owe. You also can't be taken to civil court over an unpaid fine. So not paying a parking ticket in Philadelphia could cost you more than getting a marijuana citation.
The parking issue is much more of a bigger issue for Philadelphia than marijuana will ever be in this town.
That's pot activist and professor Chris Goldstein.
We do want some sort of deterrent out there that police and other members in the community can use if they encounter cannabis consumers who are not acting like good custodians in their community.
Like Mayor Kenney, Goldstein thinks weed should be legal in Philly. Still, he supports the law, even though he's got a $100 fine for smoking in public sitting at home.
And do you plan on paying it, or is it sort of...
Well, on my writer and adjunct professor salary, when I have that extra $100 in my pocket, I do intend on giving it to Philadelphia.
A bill legalizing marijuana in Pennsylvania has been introduced in Harrisburg, but has been sitting in committee since the beginning of the year. State legislation is one of the only ways to legalize the drug and potentially send Philly's decriminalization law up in smoke. Aaron Moselle, WHYY News.
Motorists in Pennsylvania can have a better sense of roadways and intersections where accidents take place based on the work of KnowPA.com. Joining me is its team leader, Muthu Sabarathinam. Muthu, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Pleasure to talk to you today.
And I understand your work and that of your team is based in response to a contest.
That's correct. The code for PA was the first Commonwealth of Pennsylvania hackathon organized by both the state and the Harrisburg University, and we participated in that.
And so when a user goes to this site, how can they get a better sense of fatality risks on the state roads?
What we've done is there are hundreds of thousands of accidents that happen throughout Pennsylvania in any given year. but there are roughly between 3,000 to 4,000 fatalities among those accidents. And our goal here was to be able to reduce fatalities by pinpointing the most risky intersections, either which is inherently risky because of the way they are positioned, or risky because of the upcoming weather. It's either a snow or a rain that the risk just went up, and we want to be able to highlight that both to the citizens and to the state agency. So you can, all you have to do is type in your zip code and be able to zoom in on the bright red spots that you see there and see which of those intersections are for and which time of the day are they more risky than the others.
The Code for PA Hackathon Challenge is intended to create a collaborative and empowering form of citizen participation in government. Your efforts have certainly gone a ways toward doing that, though I presume it's not such an easy task to take the public data and then distill it into these informative steps.
It's a great first step because it's publicly available. So I think one of the things the PA government has done, and they gave us almost 2.5 million crash information data set for 10 years. So that's a pretty good information there. But it is not easy, like you said. You know, we needed to map it to the right locations. We had to really use publicly available positioning information as well as weather information to make sense out of this data. So we had to pretty much then give something actionable to people. If you plotted every accident in the state for 10 years, the whole state would be covered. So it's no insight if you tell people just be careful everywhere, right? So we really worked. The challenge was for us to work hard on how do we make something actionable for people. And we found that I think we've been able to explain almost 60% of the variables that affect fatality. We were able to predict fatalities over 70% of the crashes that happened in 2016 with this model. So we were able to pinpoint or focus people's attention on, 10 or 15 spots in a zip code as opposed to the 10,000 locations we just say is orange and scary.
Going forward, will the challenge for knowpa.com to be to refine these aspects of your work or to develop new domains as well?
We want to refine this further, so we really would love to have, we are predicting, right now we are forecasting the most risky spots for the upcoming week up to the 11th, and we would really want to get the real-time data back from PennDOT on what really happened this week and in how many of these spots were we able to predict beforehand, and then further make this more real time and fine-tune the model so we can actually then have our state troopers proactively be positioned in these spots. It's a simple thing, isn't it? If they're going to be on a particular road covering a certain day, if we can pinpoint the intersections where staging them would actually reduce fatalities, I think it would be a great benefit for all of us. And we do think a significant portion of these 3,000 plus fatalities can be reduced with just a little bit of more cautious driving, and the presence of a state trooper in those locations does just that. And we hope to fine tune the model to a point where we can actually really save lives.
Congratulations on being part of the winning site, KnowPA.
Thank you.
That's Muthu Sabarathanam on NewsWorks Tonight. It's been a sad week for Phillies fans. We learned yesterday of former Phillies ace Roy Halladay's untimely death after his personal plane crashed in the Gulf of Mexico. In Philadelphia, fans gathered at Citizens Bank Park to pay their respects. Longtime Phillies fan Michael Akins was there and teared up when talking about Halladay.
Aside from being a good athlete, he was an example of what it was like to be person who people just love and admire. All due respect to this man because he deserved better than what he got.
Fans created a makeshift memorial around the perimeter of the ballpark with candles and red roses. Philadelphia native Linda Morton took pictures of the memorial wearing a Phillies cap and jersey.
I loved him from the beginning. All you see, if he was interviewed, very accommodating, just a nice man.
Halladay is one of just six pitchers in Major League Baseball history to win the Cy Young Award in both the American and National Leagues. He last pitched for the Phillies in 2013, but continued to take part in team activities as a guest instructor during training camp. Halliday was 40 years old. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.